Democracy Now!, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin.
President Putin.
You can beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin.
President Biden mistakenly referring to Ukrainian President Zelensky as Russian President Putin before quickly correcting himself. Later, in his first solo news conference of the year, Biden was questioned repeatedly about his mental fitness and ability to win.
I've taken three significant and intense neurological exams by a neurologist. In each case, as recently as February. And they say I'm in good shape, okay?
Biden went on to defend his record on foreign policy, NATO, Gaza, and more. We'll get response from a roundtable of guests. Then, I'm bored, so I shoot. The Israeli army's approval of free-for-all violence in Gaza.
This is the first time that so many soldiers testify about what's happening inside the Gaza Strip. And by talking to them, we understand that the sense of revenge, the feeling that there are no innocents in Gaza, is not a sporadic incident, but rather our official policy.
A new report by 972 magazine interviews six Israeli soldiers following their release from active duty in Gaza. They describe being authorized to open fire on Palestinians virtually at will. We'll speak with a reporter who broke the story. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden took to the podium Thursday evening for his first solo press conference in this year, as debate over whether Biden should remain the Democratic nominee reaches a fever pitch. Biden remained defiant, saying he's determined to, quote, finish the job, and reasserting he's best positioned to beat Donald Trump. Biden addressed concerns about his mental fitness.
I've taken three significant and intense neurological exams by a neurologist. In each case, as recently as February. And they say I'm in good shape. Okay?
But Biden's performance was far from smooth, as he accidentally called Vice President Kamala Harris Vice President Trump.
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president. So let's start there. Number one, the fact is that the consideration is that I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again.
Just hours earlier at the NATO summit, Biden mistakenly referred to the Ukrainian President Zelensky as President Putin as the three-day NATO summit came to a close.
And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin.
President Putin.
You can beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin.
Three more House Democrats called on President Biden to step aside following the news conference. And more news from the NATO summit. The U.S. approved a new $225 million military aid package for Ukraine, including a Patriot missile system. Ukrainian President Zelensky again urged NATO allies to lift all restrictions on Ukraine's use of long-range weapons to strike targets inside Russia, saying the move would be a game changer. Meanwhile, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez criticized NATO's double standard when it comes to support for Ukraine versus Gaza.
Pues España lo que ha hecho ha sido reclamar para Ucrania
como también para Gaza.
What Spain has done has been to demand for Ukraine, as well as for Gaza, the same manner and the same firmness in respecting international law. I believe that our strength lies in our unity and also in our coherence.
No podemos ni debemos permitirnos ser acusados.
We cannot and should not allow ourselves to be accused by anyone of having double standards in the defense of international law.
Del derecho internacional.
In May, Spain formally recognized the state of Palestine. In related news, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban traveled to meet with Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago resort Thursday after leaving the NATO summit in Washington. Orban, who also visited President Putin in Moscow as well as Beijing in recent weeks, says he's on a, quote, peace mission, 5.0. In Gaza, rescue workers are recovering dozens of dead bodies following 2 days of nonstop Israeli attacks in western Gaza City, much of which has now been left in ruins. Survivors say their buildings were attacked in the middle of the night. One man, Musa al-Dadu, says his family was forced from their shelter in the middle of the night by Israeli forces.
My mother's in a wheelchair, my wife as well, and she has metal support in her arms and legs. My grandson is paralyzed in the legs. His father had to carry him on his back.
In more news from Gaza, at least 70 media organizations are urging Israel to give reporters unfettered access to the besieged territory. Media outlets, including the Associated Press, BBC, CNN, The Guardian, New York Times, and The Washington Post, said in a letter, quote, "The effective ban on foreign reporting has placed an impossible and unreasonable burden on local reporters to document a war through which they are living. More than 100 journalists have been killed since the start of the war, and those who remain are working in conditions of extreme deprivation," the newspapers wrote. In Israel, the first results of the military's investigation into its response to the October 7th attack by Hamas were published Thursday. The report finds the military was unprepared for the incursion into Kibbutz Be'eri and was slow and disorganized in its response. Over 100 Israelis were killed, another 30 taken hostage from Be'eri. The report, however, denied that hostages killed during a standoff between Hamas and Israeli soldiers were killed in friendly fire, as some have suggested, though it did not offer evidence that Hamas killed them. Members of Kibbutz Be'eri expressed dissatisfaction with the military assessment.
We know what are the conclusions, some conclusions, but not like the big picture conclusion, and what could have done differently, and what they are going to do on the next step. How can we feel secure again, safe again? How can we come back to live in Kibbutz Be'eri?
In Texas, 1 million people in the Houston area remain without power and water after Hurricane Beryl slammed into the region Monday amidst a protracted heat wave. Hospitals report a surge in patients with heat-related conditions and are unable to swiftly discharge patients if they don't have electricity at home to stay cool. Extreme heat has killed at least 28 people in the United States over the past week, most of those in California, where wildfires have burned five times the average area this year, according to state officials. Las Vegas recently reported a new record high of 120 degrees Fahrenheit and is on a record-breaking streak of at least six straight days of temperatures topping 115 degrees. Last week, the Biden administration proposed a new rule that would require employers to provide regular rest breaks and water to workers during high temperatures. The rule, which is facing opposition from industry and Republicans, could offer relief to some 500,000 agricultural workers and over 4 million construction workers nationwide, many of whom are immigrants. In Nepal, over 60 people are missing after landslides swept two buses into a river earlier today. Over 90 people have been killed in monsoon-triggered landslides and floods in Nepal over the past month. In Kenya, President William Ruto has fired nearly all his cabinet members amidst continued unrest. And 2 weeks after Ruto scrapped a highly taxed bill, following mass protests, at least 41 people were killed as police violently cracked down on demonstrations. On Thursday, the Kenya Human Rights Commission called on Ruto to prosecute security chiefs responsible for the killings. In Saudi Arabia, a man's been sentenced to 20 years in prison for charges related to his social media activity. Asad Al-Ghamdi, a 47-year-old teacher, was arrested in November, convicted of publishing false information and, quote, challenging the religion and justice of the king and the crown prince, unquote. He was held incommunicado, placed in solitary confinement in a Jeddah prison. He's also been denied medical attention for his epilepsy, suffering multiple seizures while in custody, according to Human Rights Watch. One of his brothers was sentenced to death last year over his tweets, some of which called for the release of political prisoners. In the United Arab Emirates, over 40 lawyers, academics, and political dissidents were sentenced to between 10 years to life in prison this week, following a mass trial human rights groups are denouncing as a sham. More than 80 people were tried, many of whom had already been convicted years ago and were serving prison sentences for the same or similar offenses. Human Rights Watch said the proceedings were marred by serious due process and fair trial violations, including the use of torture. Back in the United States, a federal court has ruled that Black Lives Matter activist DeRay McKesson cannot be held responsible for injuries inflicted by someone else while attending a protest that McKesson had organized following the 2016 police killing of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The ruling came after the U.S. Supreme Court in April declined to take the case. The ACLU hailed Thursday's decision in favor of McKesson as a crucial win for the First Amendment right to protest. And reproductive rights advocates vowed to challenge a move by Arkansas Secretary of State John Thurston, who on Wednesday disqualified a grassroots ballot initiative that seeks to enshrine abortion access in Arkansas's constitution. Thurston argued the group behind the proposed ballot amendment, Arkansans for Limited Government, failed to identify paid canvassers tossing 14,000 of the more than 100,000 signatures collected. Voters in nearly a dozen states could see abortion-related amendments on the ballot in November. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, President Biden holds his first solo news conference this year, questioned repeatedly about his mental fitness as he defended his record on foreign policy, NATO, Gaza, and more. We'll have a roundtable discussion. Stay with us. Summer by Bananarama. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the world watched Thursday evening, President Biden held his first solo news conference this year after hosting a NATO summit in Washington, D.C., in which he accidentally referred to the Ukrainian President Zelensky as Russian President Putin before quickly correcting himself.
Russia will not prevail in this war. Ukraine will prevail in this war, and we'll stand with them every single step of the way. That's what the compact says, loudly and clearly. And now I want to hand it over to the president of Ukraine, who has as much courage as he has determination. Ladies and gentlemen, President Putin. President Putin. You can beat President Putin. President Zelensky. I'm so focused on beating Putin, we got to worry about it. Anyway. Mr. President,
I'm better.
You are a hell of a lot better.
Later Thursday, amidst mounting calls for President Biden to end his presidential campaign due to concerns about his physical and mental fitness for office, Biden vowed in his news conference to stay in the race and finish the job to defeat Donald Trump in November. As Biden spoke, former President Trump was meeting with the far-right Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban in Mar-a-Lago, who is now also head of the European Union and has vowed to, quote, make Europe great again. After Biden started his news conference nearly an hour late, the first question came from Jeff Mason of Reuters.
Mr. President, your political future has hung over the NATO summit a little bit this week. Speaker Pelosi made a point of suggesting that your decision on whether to stay in the race was still open. George Clooney and a handful of lawmakers have called on you to step aside. Reuters is reporting tonight that UAW leadership is concerned about your ability to win.
UAW just endorsed me, but go ahead.
Thank you. My question for you is, how are you incorporating these developments into your decision to stay? And separately, what concerns do you have about Vice President Harris's ability to beat Donald Trump if she were at the top of the ticket?
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president. So let's start there. Number one. The fact is that the consideration is that I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again. Secondly, the idea, I served in the Senate a long time. The idea that senators and congressmen running for office worry about the ticket is not unusual. And I might add, there are at least five presidents running or incumbent presidents who had lower numbers than I have now, later in the campaign. So there's a long way to go in this campaign. And so I'm just going to keep moving.
As President Biden noted, the UAW did endorse him, but Reuters is also reporting that the UAW president, Sean Fain, met with the union's executive board Thursday to discuss his deep concerns with Biden's ability to beat Donald Trump. After Thursday night's key news conference, which a Bloomberg reporter had called his big boy press conference, a term later used by Biden's White House press secretary and national security spokesperson John Kirby, three more House Democrats called on Biden to withdraw from the presidential race. Congressmember Jim Himes, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, issued a statement that, quote, the stakes are high. We're on a losing course. My conscience requires me to speak up and put loyalty to the country and to democracy ahead of my great affection for and loyalty to the president and those around him, unquote. This comes after the New York Times editorial board published a piece this week headlined, The Democratic Party Must Speak the Plain Truth to the President, in which it argued Donald Trump's candidacy for a second term poses a grave threat to American democracy, but that Biden, quote, does not seem to understand that he's now the problem and that the best hope for Democrats to retain the White House is for him to step aside, the Times wrote. In a minute, we'll talk more about NATO, Ukraine, and Gaza. But we're going to begin with a roundtable of three guests to discuss the calls for Biden to drop out or stay in the race. In Washington, D.C., Madea Benjamin is with us. She's co-founder of Code Pink, co-author of the books NATO, What You Need to Know, and War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. Joining us from Maryland is Bill Fletcher, longtime labor, racial justice, international activist who's on the editorial board of The Nation, co-founder of the Ukrainian Solidarity Network. And in Los Angeles, we're joined by David Dayan, executive editor of The American Prospect, who's been following all of this closely, has a recent piece headlined, Why the Bid to Push Out Biden is Losing. David, let's begin with you in California. What was your assessment? I mean, we played some of the gaffes of President Biden. They were early on, actually, before he got into a lot of substance, though his voice faltered and was hoarse and raspy. He spent an hour talking about foreign policy. But that beginning where he was talking about Kamala Harris and why couldn't she be president or could she be president, and the whole issue of passing the torch to the next generation as President Biden had said when he was running last time that he simply saw himself as a bridge to the next generation. Take it all on, David.
Well, I don't go in for theater criticism a whole lot, so I don't know that I'm super interested in addressing this, the theatrics of the whole thing. I think people were looking for a sign out of this that maybe was unreasonable. People are looking for him to either fall off the podium or recite the Gettysburg Address from memory. And neither of those things happened. There was no clear kind of signal of the problem is that when you lose faith with not just the American people, but the Democratic Party, it's hard to restore that. I mean, the guy is not going to age backwards. People saw what they saw in the debate, and I don't know that there's a good way to unsee that. I don't care how many appearances publicly that he does, scripted or unscripted. He articulated his foreign policy. Some our other guests on the roundtable may have problems with that foreign policy, but he certainly knew the details. And substantively gave, a performance that would be not unlike other performances by other presidents at press conferences. So, out of the context of all that has been happening for the last 2 weeks, I think this would have been quite uneventful. But because of that context, everything is looked at, finely grained, and things that would not be a headline at all from you or anybody else are now turned into headlines. And that actually speaks to the problem of his candidacy. I mean, at this point, the media is out for blood. They're looking for every gaffe, every misspeak, anything to reinforce this argument. And then they can go to a member of Congress and say, hey, he said this. What do you think now? I don't see that subsiding. I think that will only grow. And it speaks to whether this president, it's not necessarily about fitness for office, but it's about whether or not he can withstand that in the rigors of a presidential campaign, given that this is just going to snowball and snowball.
Talk about the Congress members, the insiders, the Biden team members, Sean Fain, who early on the UAW endorsed President Biden, the significance of what they're saying, and George Clooney, this very well known at this piece op-ed in The New York Times, saying that he loves President Biden. He's one of the largest fundraisers, organized a historic fundraiser, I think, that raised something like $26 million. He said President Biden is simply not the same and can't beat Trump. Talk about, name the names and the significance of the people who are saying get out to Biden.
Well, Fain, if he were to come forward, would actually be the first labor leader to have anything to say regarding President Biden's candidacy. Labor has been pretty silent. They've backed him up. President Biden spoke at the AFL-CIO convention on Wednesday and got overwhelming support. Labor is kind of the only mass membership organization that we have on the Democratic left anymore. Most of these are foundation funded. This kind of push to move Biden aside has largely, at least in the perception, been driven by donors, by people like George Clooney, elite donors and rich people. Biden at the press conference said corporate profits were too high. And that's true. They have elevated since the pandemic. And the donor class that's desperate to get him out of the race is probably unlikely to favor a substitute that would say something like that. And I think that's a consideration that people need to think about. I think in this case, the donor class and, large segments of the Democratic Party, ordinary people, are aligned. That's what the polls say. But there is a perception that this is being driven from this sort of elite group of people. That's certainly what Biden has wanted to play up in rebutting it, saying, this is out of touch people who have always counted me out, who don't like me and look down upon me, think I'm stupid or whatever. That has been his go-to way to parry this, and it's been somewhat successful, although we'll see if the dam breaks now that the NATO summit is over. Other members of Congress might come out. I think if Fain did, that might give courage to other labor leaders who speak for millions of people to actually do the same.
And what about the significance of another Sean O'Brien, head of the Teamsters, asking both the Democrats and the Republicans if he can address their conventions? The Republicans said yes, we'll be in Milwaukee next week. He will be speaking, but he has not yet gotten okay from the Democrats, apparently, in Chicago in August.
Yeah, Sean O'Brien will be speaking in, I believe, in prime time at the Republican National Convention. It's very rare for a labor leader to speak before the Republicans. O'Brien trying to position himself, no matter what party comes out of the presidential election, I suppose. It's very unique. It's certainly been criticized internally. It's been criticized from folks on the Democratic left. I don't know that he's going to get that Democratic nod because he's speaking at the Republican convention. It would be almost unprecedented for someone to speak at both conventions. So I think it's certainly interesting and fascinating. There is this nascent campaign that the Teamsters are fighting against Amazon, where they're trying to organize Amazon warehouses, Amazon delivery drivers, people of that nature. And, I'd prefer to focus on that. But the way he's getting wrapped up politically, it's bound to disappoint one side or the other.
I want to bring Bill Fletcher into this conversation, longtime labor, racial justice, international activist on the editorial board of The Nation magazine. As we talk about labor and the positions it's taking and the significance of Sean Fain, who embraced President Biden early on, has been at the White House. Now the questions about he's raising, the significance of that to the Teamsters.
Good morning, and thanks, Amy, for having me on. I think that what Fain is doing, or at least reported doing, is just bringing to the surface a debate that has been going on very quietly within the ranks of the leadership of organized labor. There is concern about this situation, and so I'm glad that Fain is raising this, absolutely.
Bill, you're breaking up. Go ahead.
Biden's.
Go ahead. Just come very close to the computer.
The focus on Biden's screw ups in terms of forgetting names, et cetera. There's been, I think, an exaggeration of that. You know, it's like Republicans. Like one can remember Ronald Reagan, who forgot the name of his own secretary of HUD. Republicans can do that all the time, and it gets no press attention. Republicans could make El Cid's body their presidential candidate, and people would accept that. I think that the deeper problem is that something is that Biden is an old man and that he needs to step aside. That the original commitment to be the transitional candidate, which many people, including within organized labor, embraced, was the right one. But as Chris Hayes said last night on MSNBC, that the key phrasing last night by Biden was he had to finish the job, and reminded Chris of how a pitcher in baseball will want to finish a game, even when they don't have the strength to complete it. And it's when that happens that the manager needs to say, no, we will finish the game. We. And that's what the Democrats